Corporate underwriting on KPBS offers a unique opportunity for brands to demonstrate their corporate social responsibility as public media brings light to important causes. Your investment can showcase your brand's values and commitment to the public good. Email corporate support at kpbs.org.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Friday, February 13th. Why many DHS employees could go without pay as soon as tomorrow. More on that next, but first, let's do the headlines. A Superior Court judge ruled that gender-affirming care at Rady Children's Hospital must continue, at least for now. Rady was sued by Attorney General Rob Bonta after the hospital announced it was cutting the services. Bonta's office says that as part of Rady's merger with Children's Hospital of Orange County, any elimination of such services requires approval from the AG's office. This decision comes amid Rady sharing what they describe as escalating threats from the Trump administration to end Medicare and Medicaid funding. The Superior Court judge said it's a threat that might become a reality, but is not yet at that stage. A little more than $300,000 in unclaimed property tax refunds will be spent on a rental assistance program providing support to low-income senior citizens. That's after the County Board of Supervisors voted on the proposal earlier this week. The program provides a rent subsidy to elders with low incomes and who are at risk of experiencing homelessness. Back in October, nearly $2 million in community parking district funds were reallocated to go towards infrastructure repairs. And since then, San Diego City crews say they've been able to put that money to good use. More than 1,000 streetlights and nearly 2,500 potholes have been repaired since the change. The repairs took place across the four community parking district areas, Mid-City, Downtown, Uptown, and Pacific Beach. The city says sidewalks are also being repaired in both Uptown and Downtown. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
San Diego County is known for being one of America's most expensive regions. Locals are feeling the squeeze and looking for solutions. KPBS's new series, Price of San Diego, delves into the rising cost of groceries, childcare, car insurance, and even our beloved California burrito. You won't want to miss this ongoing series live now at kpbs.org/priceofsandiego.
Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem was in San Diego yesterday to talk about drug seizures. Reporter Andrew Bowen says the visit comes as funding for her department is set to expire.
Thank you for being here. I'm Kristi Noem, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security.
Noem spoke to reporters at the Otay Mesa Port of Entry in front of evidence boxes she said were full of drugs seized at the border. She spoke over sirens turned on in an apparent effort to drown out protesters chanting just outside the facility. Noem praised the officers who catch the drugs, mostly at legal border crossings.
Now, the men and women here at Otay Mesa are heroes who work around the clock to make sure that they're keeping Americans safe. Fentanyl has killed countless Americans who still should be here with us today. In fact, I've met with many parents who've lost children to fentanyl poisoning.
Fentanyl deaths in the U.S. began to drop under President Biden in 2023. Experts point to the growing availability of Narcan, which can reverse overdoses. One recent study suggested a crackdown in China could also be disrupting the global supply of the narcotic. Noem's visit coincided with the drawdown of federal agents from Minneapolis following the killings of Alex Preddy and Renee Good. Democrats in Congress are demanding limits to ICE and CBP officer conduct in exchange for funding Noem's department. If no deal is reached, many DHS employees will be working without pay starting on Saturday. Andrew Bowen, KPBS News.
Midday Edition host Jade Hindman spoke with Wired's Leah Feiger about her article on ICE expanding across the U.S. Here's that conversation.
First, I want to ask you, how did this story get on your radar?
Yeah, so I think the way that so many of our stories at Wired start is really with a very technical, almost mechanical question, which is, where were all of these ICE employees going to literally sit and be based? And to back up a little bit, since President Donald Trump took office, ICE has more than doubled in size. DHS claims that the agency now has over 22,000 officers and agents stationed around the country. They've received nearly $80 billion from the Big Beautiful Bill. So with all of this, quite literally, where were people going to go? So that was the guiding question that I used going into this to really try and figure out, okay, are we talking like just only expanded offices? Are we talking a couple of cities? Where should we be looking here? And that's when we found out that it was everywhere.
Wow. So when we hear ICE facility, a lot of people might think of detention facilities, which are also expanding across the country and also known as black sites due to their clandestine nature. But to be clear, that's not necessarily what we're talking about here, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, our reporting doesn't necessarily refer to where these warehouse detention facilities. There's been so much great reporting on them from Bloomberg to The Washington Post to a lot of great local papers. These offices that we reported on really appear to be leasing spaces or plans for leasing spaces for ICE's enforcement and removal operations, which is known as the ERO, and the Office of Principal Legal Advisor, which is known as OPLA. And these are ICE divisions, and they're located across the country.
Wow. You label this months-long operation to expand ICE offices a secret campaign. Why is that?
Yeah, so we call this secret because in numerous memos and documents that I viewed, DHS asked GSA, which is the General Services Administration, which is where, you know, a lot of our reporting is about, because they are the branch of the government that handles internal IT and also government leasing. But anyway, DHS asked GSA explicitly to disregard usual government lease procurement procedures and actually even hide listings due to quote-unquote national security concerns. We have so many different memos to this effect, and it really paints kind of a wild picture from the fall of 2025 through starting in September.
But again, you really emphasize, you know, this rapid speed at which these leases are being acquired. I mean, talk to me a bit about that.
Yeah, you know, government work doesn't usually happen this quickly, for better or for worse. And that's partially because of bureaucracy, but it's also in order to have the public and relevant stakeholders weigh in. Like, there is a very serious part of government process that is actively slow in order to allow for that, in order to allow for this outside input that just clearly didn't happen here. And as the Trump administration continues supporting ICE's rapid expansion and growth, the checks and balances for its power and spread are appearing virtually non-existent. So we can't talk about the secrecy without talking about the speed. It's just too much for your average American resident, lawyer, journalist, anyone to keep up with. But people really should know that if they go to the dentist, drop their kids off at preschool, go to church, wherever they're trying to go, that they're within walking distance of ICE facilities.
I want to talk about where these offices will be. You report that these facilities will be placed near sensitive locations, communal spaces, you know, like elementary schools and places of worship. What are some examples that stand out to you beyond that?
Oh, gosh, this is, I mean, like, how long do you have? Can I just read my entire list? It was shocking. It was shocking. I'm looking up these addresses and I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? Can you actually do that? Can you put an office next to a preschool without telling everyone? These are all places that regular people go to on a day-to-day basis with no expectation that they'll be interacting with ICE agents, officers, lawyers, no expectation that they should be carrying any sort of paperwork that designates their status in this country, or no expectation that, like, they might not be going home after going on this walk. It's mind-boggling to me that the government's trying to keep this secret.
Wow. Well, some of these facilities will actually be sharing, again, office space with other entities. You mentioned the DMV. Any other offices?
Yeah. I mean, we have a couple of one. We reported about, you know, places sharing with drug enforcement agencies, and in San Diego, your city, that ICE's planned location at the Edward J. Schwartz Courthouse Building. This is happening all over the country. We kept coming across where it was like maybe ICE would have already been there. For example, the Rosa Parks federal building in Detroit, but like now they appear to be expanding. So it's every single location we had, there was either a presence or appeared to be plans for further presence. There'd already been protests in communities with regards to ICE and ICE treatment. It's just so widespread.
Wow. And that's that San Diego building, the Edward J. Schwartz Courthouse and Federal Building. It's the same place where we've seen reports of people being held in the basement. And, you know, our legislators can't seem to get in there to tour the place, to see what's happening. I mean, what does all of that signal to you?
Yeah, California is in a bit of a unique situation right now. What it means for California could be something that Wired has actually reported before. A few weeks ago, my colleague McKenna Kelly and I reported that the Trump administration was eyeing New York and California as follow-up locations post-Minnesota for fraud investigations.
Is it safe to say there's more to come?
Yes. Simply, this is the first and hopefully a few pieces we're going to do on this. And all of this information is really happening in real time.
Wow. I've been speaking with Leah Feiger. She's senior politics editor with Wired. Leah, thank you so much and congratulations on this important reporting.
Thank you so much for having me.
Defense contractors were in San Diego this week to hear from the Navy and Marine Corps about how they plan to spend a record amount of money on defense in the coming years. Military reporter Andrew Dyer says the message coming from the military at the annual West Conference was simple. We've got the money and we're looking to spend it.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegg says new AI acceleration strategy is supposed to help streamline contracting to bring new technologies to the military faster. The promise of more defense spending, fewer guardrails, and an administration all in on AI has ignited a feeding frenzy among private sector companies looking for a piece of the action. During his conference keynote speech, Navy Secretary John Phelan told an audience of mostly defense industry representatives the Pentagon has a new tolerance for risk.
The weight of calculated action outweighs the comfort of caution. It is better to bear the burden of bold attempts than carry the regret of what could have been.
Former Joint Chiefs Vice Chairman Admiral Christopher Grady talked about the challenge of training troops to use new AI tools.
Right down to what's the wait rate to write a prompt.
The Pentagon plans to spend more than $145 billion on research and development this year. Andrew Dyer, KPBS News.
Student artists from San Ysidro High School are showcasing their upbringing and future plans in a new exhibition. Education reporter Katie Anastas says it's on display in Balboa Park.
12th grader Estefania Padilla grew up in Tijuana. She remembers walking through town with her grandfather, visiting their favorite stores.
Walking around, seeing colorful places to me as a kid was super fun.
She's recreated that scene in a colored pencil drawing, now on display at the Japanese Friendship Garden. At the center is Padilla, riding a giant guinea pig. That's a reference to a childhood pet that inspired her to pursue a career in veterinary medicine.
I was a very studious kid, and my biggest dream was to become a veterinarian.
Padilla is one of the artists featured in the exhibit. It's called Roots and Blossoms. The pieces showcase students' heritage and dreams for the future. Next to each piece is an artist statement. That's something many art students don't write until college, says art teacher Daniel Solomon.
You get a chance to share with people, this is why I chose this flower. This is why I chose this color.
It's also the students' first time showing their art outside of the classroom.
I'm really, really proud of all of the entities that came together to provide these students an opportunity to display their artwork publicly so they know that they deserve to be, you know, praised.
The exhibit runs through Thursday, February 19th. Katie Anastas, KPBS News.
As we do for you each and every weekend, here are some event ideas for you and yours happening across the county this Valentine's Day weekend. With events on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 2026 SD Lunar New Year Festival looks like a heap of cultural-filled fun. It's free, and it takes place at Officer Jeremy Henwood Memorial Park in City Heights. You can compete in an eating and drinking contest and watch dance performances. The kiddos will be able to express their creativity with three children's art murals. Love Lit Con also will have events all weekend long taking place at the Sheridan on Harbor Island Drive. It's a convention for romance book lovers. There will be keynote speakers, panel discussions, author signings, and parties. Last but definitely not least, on Sunday, there is Dago Eats. It's a celebration of Black-owned businesses as part of this year's Black History Month offerings. The event will feature games, live music, yoga, and food trucks. There's also face painting and a bounce house for kids. That takes place from noon to 5 p.m. at 6785 Imperial Ave in Encanto. Whatever you do decide to do this weekend, be safe and enjoy. That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
Your celluloid addiction with the Cinema Junkie podcast, where you can mainline film with the people who make them, as well as those who love them, program them, and celebrate them for their cultural impact. Listen to Cinema Junkie wherever you get your podcasts.